KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Yeah, it said you don't have to have nudity, but if you do, make sure that it's both male and female, because we are aware of perceptions of certain networks and certain shows that are primarily female nudity and no male nudity. And we were like,
consider it done.
Showrunners Brian Fuller and Michael Green were more than ready to go full frontal with their new Starz series, American Gods, even if not all the actors were ready to take that plunge. Green and Fuller tell us about their earlier heartbreaks on broadcast shows, adapting an epic novel that had been considered unfilmable, and yes, how they finally got an actor to drop his towel. But first on the news banter, the cast of Will and Grace sings and dances while Roseanne returns. Don't check your calendar. It's the 2017 Upfronts. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by a special guest banterer, Leslie Goldberg of The Hollywood Reporter. She's TV news editor, and she's been really busy, but she's taking some time out. This has been a week of this past week with TV upfronts. This is when the broadcast networks go on stage in New York at big venues and pitch their fall season to advertisers. They do these big, splashy productions. The idea is, give us your money, advertisers. Normally, they've been doing about $9 billion worth of business selling ads in the fall schedule off of this event. So it's obviously a huge, big deal. It keeps Leslie very busy writing about new shows that are going to come on the air. But before we get to some of those, it just feels like this is a really anxious time. We keep, you know, for years now, it's been like, oh, the TV broadcast model is challenged. And I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like all of a sudden, even though they're still going to get a lot of money out of this, the advent of streaming and millions of other options that people have to entertain themselves is starting to suddenly be a very tangible phenomenon.
Absolutely. You can feel the paradigm shifting this season. A lot of the broadcast networks are going after digital outlets like Facebook and company as competitors instead of biting after their fellow networks. Although obviously that's still happening, but it's more about making sure advertisers know that TV is still the place to be.
A safe place, because you don't find your ad against naked people or alt-right propaganda.
Exactly.
So they are saying, we are safe, and what, we are still big tent, even though our ratings are just a shadow of what they were years ago.
Yes, they're saying it's the safest place to attract a big audience with a guarantee. Whether or not that's still true a year from now, I don't know.
Now, it seems to me, just watching the presentations from afar, what's old is new again. I mean, as I mentioned, they do some splashy presentations. NBC did one for a renewed season and reunion of Will and Grace. They had a whole musical number and lets us hear a little bit.
Anonymous liaisons with tall guys and with shorties still need that thrill. And one blue pill, 'cause now I'm in my 40s.
So there's Will and Grace, but that's not the only old show being pulled back onto the broadcast network schedules.
Correct. ABC is reviving Roseanne in an era where a lot of these networks are trying to reach middle America, and aka the Trump states. They're bringing back the most working class sitcom possibly in television history. The whole cast reunited at ABC's Upfront. They recreated that iconic image of the whole cast gathered around the family couch. Look, I grew up watching Roseanne. I love that show. I'm eager to see what the revival is, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm cautiously pessimistic. I just feel like, I was also a big fan of Roseanne, and I thought it was kind of funny for people who know Roseanne. There was original Becky, who ultimately left the show and was replaced by what we used to call new Becky.
And but both Beckys are returning, but only the original Becky
gets
will
to
play
be Becky. And they found a part for the other, not, you know, the second Becky.
Sarah Chalk, who's a great actress,
yeah.
But we don't know what role she's going to play.
She's going to be something.
But you forgot the big problem is the Roseanne, spoiler alert, the Roseanne series finale, the final season, Dan, who was played by John Goodman, died. So how they're going to bring John back,
awkward,
and Dan back, I don't know.
Now, the other thing that I found interesting was the discussion of American Idol. Obviously, American Idol was a giant Death Star hit for Fox for a long time. Ultimately, it started to wind down and become extremely expensive. Now, wound down American Idol is still not nothing, but Fox decided that it was simply too expensive to go on. You know, you had talent that was, you know, like Jennifer Lopez and who knows what Ryan Seacrest was making at that point. Yeah. So other networks looked at it. It's going to ABC. I thought it was interesting what Les Moonves said at the CBS event. He said they looked at it very seriously and they just decided that it is still going to cost too much. And, you know, I read a column by Richard Rushfield, one of our colleagues in journalism, which I thought was an interesting point that he made, which is when American Idol started, nobody really knew who Simon Cowell was. It wasn't this overloaded, you know, Christmas tree. And meanwhile, now, of course, they're especially competing with The Voice on NBC. They're signing Katy Perry. And Les Moonves' conclusion is it's still going to be too expensive for what they're able to get.
Absolutely. And ABC is got to be in the same boat. It has to be a loss leader for them. But at the same time, this is a show that is going to bring in a large audience, will bring in advertisers, and will still top The Voice and easily top ABC's own Dancing with the Stars, which is starting to show its age. But it's a franchise. You know, my colleague Michael O'Connell reported that they're probably going to do auditions at Disneyland. I mean, that's a possibility.
That's part of the Disney ABC family, right?
Putting the Disney stamp on a franchise like Idol, I think, you know, I'm not an Idol fan, but I'm going to tune in to see what they do to it.
Yeah, and of course, Fox managed to launch shows like, well, famously, House was the big show they launched off of the Idol. So even if it's
expensive.
And Glee,
don't forget Glee.
Oh, yes, and Glee. Thanks for reminding me. And so even if you're not making a fortune, you could arguably say, we are going to launch big shows off of this thing if we can figure out big shows to launch. Now, looking at stuff that is actually original, what are we looking forward to?
Personally, I tend to favor stuff that gives you the feels. So anything that Jason Kadams, who created Parenthood and Friday Night Lights, anything that he does, chances are I'm going to need a box of Kleenex to go with it and really love it. But he has a new show coming to NBC. It's called Rise. It's based on the book Drama High. And just like the book title says, it takes place at a high school and revolves around the struggling drama department. Josh Radnor from How I Met Your Mother stars opposite the breakout from Moana. Musical elements produced by someone from Hamilton. That's a good combination. I'm super excited about that one.
There's also a show called The Mayor. Maybe we'll play a little clip of this one. Tell us the setup of The Mayor, basically.
The Mayor revolves around a young aspiring rapper who is having trouble getting noticed and decides to run for his small town mayor, to be mayor of his small town. And unexpectedly, of course, wins the election. And, you know, it's got musical components. It's executive produced by Hamilton's David Diggs. Co-stars Glee's Lea Michele. Got a lot of buzz going for it, too. That's something, and it fits perfectly in ABC's comedy wheelhouse.
So let's take a quick listen.
Courtney Rose is a know-nothing egomaniac whose entire campaign is a stunt.
Local rapper Courtney Rose is our projected winner in the race for mayor of Fort Grey.
Well...
Okay, and then I'll just mention that CBS is trying to take advantage of one of its existing properties with a spinoff from The Big Bang Theory, which will be Sheldon at 9 years old. We'll see how all of these shows fare. Most of them usually find it rough out there, a few break through. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you, Kim. Always a pleasure.
That's Leslie Goldberg, TV news editor at The Hollywood Reporter. The sprawling new Starz series, American Gods, based on the 2001 Neil Gaiman novel, is packed full of characters, some human, some mythical. The story follows a taciturn convict named Shadow Moon, played by Ricky Whittle, who emerges from prison and immediately finds himself employed by a mysterious and mischievous man who goes only by the name of Wednesday. He is played by Ian McShane. What Wednesday wants from this arrangement, other than a driver and some muscle, isn't immediately clear, but Shadow soon finds himself engulfed in chaos, and he suspects Wednesday has something to do with it. As the two embark on a road trip, Wednesday hints that he and other very unusual characters have links to immigrants who, over generations, have brought a mix of religious beliefs to America.
This is the only country in the world that wonders what it is.
You've been to a lot of other countries, have you?
No, never. Just this one. Just so the others know what they are.
Americans know who they are.
Well, they pretend they know, but it's still just pretending, like I'm pretending now, just like you.
What am I pretending?
You are pretending you cannot believe in impossible things.
Our guests today are American Gods showrunners Brian Fuller and Michael Green. Each has had 20-year-long writing careers in the industry. Fuller got his start writing for the Star Trek Voyager TV show and went on to create the ABC series Pushing Daisies and the NBC drama Hannibal. Green co-wrote the screenplay for this year's mega-hit Wolverine movie, Logan, as well as the upcoming Murder on the Orient Express and Blade Runner 2049. They first met more than a decade ago as writers on the NBC show Heroes. Fuller vividly recalls reading one of Green's early scripts for what would become the short-lived, though critically acclaimed, NBC drama Kings.
I remember distinctly, I had a sense memory, including the quality of light coming through the windows, of sitting in my office and reading the butterfly scene in the King's pilot that was so beautiful, and writing Pushing Daisies simultaneously and then kicking over ideas to Michael to see how he would react. So we got along instantly, and I remember the very first day we walked into the room and all the writers were there and there was sort of small talk happening, and then Michael and I just went outside and sat on the couch and started talking.
We're still talking.
We sniffed each other out very quickly. That was your first meeting. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and we remain fans of each other's work and rooting for each other's successes and always meeting up. And we would always say, you know, we have to find a way to work together again. But we really meant it at one particular lunch.
Wasn't that a Hollywood thing?
No. I mean, yeah, people say that, but we always meant it. But then there was one particular lunch. And I actually looked up that email recently because we were now launching the show.
Do you have a sense memory of that particular lunch?
Yes, I remember where we were sitting, but it was talking about, you know, we really should find a way to be working together again because I was just free and clear for the first time in a while. And then it was 5 days later where you realized that you were going to be having a season 3 of Hannibal, and to approach American Gods, you wanted a partner, and was I interested in it? And, you know, I eked.
You eked?
Of course.
Show running is such a stupid job in that it is actually, was the Mike Schur quote, three jobs plus problems?
Three full-time jobs plus problems is, I believe, was Mike Schur, who is an excellent showrunner and an amazing writer.
That's the definition of a showrunner.
If you had to summarize it, three full-time jobs plus problems.
Yes.
And most people, one full-time job is more than enough.
More than enough, yeah. I just wanted to pause on the network experience. You both have had some crushing cancellations, I would think.
Yes.
Thanks for bringing it up.
If you'll indulge me just for a minute. I want to know two things about it, which is, you know, which one was your favorite baby? And
Our favorite dead baby?
Your favorite. Not to put too fine a point on it. And I'm going toward your now at Stars and not at a broadcast network, and whether any of that informed thinking, you know, like, let's go someplace else.
Pushing Daisies was particularly heartbreaking. Hannibal was
very
also heartbreaking.
Very passionate fan bases for these shows, and yet...
But they're niche shows, and there is a mathematical equation that was not adding up for either of them in terms of audiences. And NBC, to their credit, kept us on the air for 3 years despite horrible ratings. For Hannibal, Pushing Daisies was ABC, and that was less of a supportive situation than Hannibal was. There was a lot of trying to squeeze Pushing Daisies into a crime procedural that we were having a lot of fun in subverting. But with Hannibal, NBC really let us get away with murder on that network and should be applauded. And a lot of people are very anti-NBC with regard to how they treated Hannibal, but they kept us on the air for 3 years when no other network would have picked us up past the first year.
Mm. And the dead Michael baby.
My dead puppy, right. At the same time Brian was doing Pushing Daisies, I had a show called Kings on NBC.
Right.
And it was a
it's kind
wonderful
of an updated biblical.
Yeah, it was
for those who might not.
For the three people who remember it, thank you. It was a modern retelling of the King David story. And it was a wonderful experience. I got to make the show that I absolutely dreamt of doing. We had Ian McShane in it. And NBC at the time we were making it was actually really positive on it. They encouraged every big idea I could bring. They brought a budget behind it. And then time came to launch it, and everyone who had been a part of the team that supported it were lined up and shot. And the new regime that came in, you know, to their credit said, hey, we're not going to stop you. You know, you can finish your show because we were, I think, shooting our penultimate episode at the time.
We're not going to stop you. That's
we're not going to stop
yeah.
you. No extra money, but they decided not to launch the show and change the time slot and things happened. And so we never really had a chance to be seen, but those who did enjoyed it. And I learned how to run a show by running a show.
So is having the resilience to watch one of these little babies go, you know, is that just part of the deal? You just have to?
Yeah, I mean, we are like that little gymnast who falls off the horse and sprains her ankle, but just hops right back on and starts spinning again because we're storytellers and we want to tell stories. So if one story dies, you mourn it and then you find the next story that emboldens you and inspires you, and then you chase that.
I had some experiences early on working in writers' rooms with writers who I'd seen been broken by disappointments and couldn't get back on that horse. And I was terrified of becoming them because they just no longer were willing to do their best work anymore because it hurts too much. And fearing that, I just said, okay, then hurt me. That'll be fine.
There's a lot of network writers' rooms filled with broken writers who realize that they can't do what they want to do, so they're doing what is asked of them and are comfortable with it. And that's one experience as a television writer. But I think both Michael and I have to feel a deep-rooted emotional, spiritual connection to the stories that we're telling. Otherwise, it's simply too hard of work if you don't care.
It's just as hard to make a bad show as the show you want to make. So you may as well love it.
But you guys are kind of cray where you put yourself.
And yeah, the show in particular was very hard
yes,
to make.
Yes, we're finally getting to an American Gods moment here. So this was a long gestating project. I mean, it was at HBO. I don't know when you came on as writers, not at HBO.
No, we had nothing to do with any of the previous attempts to adapt it. I was working on Hannibal season 2 and got a call from my agent. And he said, are you a fan of American Gods? And I said, yes. And on the very last day of shooting season 2 of Hannibal, Neil Gaiman came to Toronto and we had a lovely conversation about immigration and the many wonderful themes in the book about identity and the search for identity. And he ended the conversation with, would you be the showrunner on American Gods? And I said, yes, if I can work with Michael Green.
And Michael Green said,
I said yes loud and quickly because I was a fan of the book and a fan of Brian's and just couldn't wait to start doing that.
So did you guys check it out or no? Like this thing had been at HBO and it had died there.
No, we were very foolish.
People tried to tell us at various points what didn't work there and we just, you know, fingers in ears, la, 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 don't tell us. We'll make our own mistakes and that'll be fun. We're just fortunate that it didn't work at HBO so that it became free and clear and went back to Neil, who was working with an executive, Stephanie Burke, who's at Fremantle, and she and he together wanted to make sure that it found the right home.
Now, was it always at Starz?
That was the first and only place we brought it to. It was an early conversation where we talked about where could this live? What are appropriate hosts for this? And among the hosts that might be good for this, who would be the most hungry for it? And they were very happy to listen to us describe it and say, we'll take it off the table right now. Don't pitch it elsewhere. And we were happy to only wear one clean shirt.
I know,
no
for
pants.
A writer.
No pants,
yeah, but. That is, yeah, right. Shirt, but no pants. That's formal. Coming up after a short break, American Gods showrunners Michael Green and Brian Fuller tell us about one particularly expensive and explicit love scene and why it had to be reshot. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Brian Fuller and Michael Green, showrunners of American Gods, now on Stars. The series, like the Neil Gaiman novel that inspired it, follows an ex-con named Shadow Moon, played by Ricky Whittle, who ends up working as a driver and bodyguard for a mysterious man named Wednesday, played by Ian McShane. Soon after Shadow begins his new job, it becomes apparent that Wednesday may possess otherworldly powers, an idea that Shadow is hesitant to consider, though Wednesday encourages him to take a leap of faith.
Belief is only a product of the company we keep and how easily we scare, and you do not scare easily.
And my company is questionable.
Always has been. The only thing that scares me is being forgotten. I can survive most things, but not that.
The idea that gods in America need believers to keep them alive takes some time to tease out in the TV version, which is filled with digressions concerning all kinds of mysterious supernatural beings, including a very tall leprechaun, a modern-day incarnation of the Queen of Sheba, and the Jinn, that's J-I-N-N, a mythical man made of fire and capable of granting wishes. Obviously, this is extraordinarily challenging material with lots of characters and lots of mythology. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen some critics saying, I don't know quite what's going on. Did you just say, well, people are going to stay with us and figure out the story? Or how did you think about that?
We went in and just said, how can we give people our experience of having read it? Which meant that it would be surprising and strange and weird, but in a fun way. And that meant it wouldn't conform to regular narrative expectations. It was going to be much looser here. And so whenever people watch it and describe it in those terms of like, oh, it seems slow because they keep waiting for us to...
Oh, I wasn't saying so much slow as
no,
trying to figure out who's who.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. They keep waiting for us to explain it to them. And we probably never will because it's just meant to be experienced and enjoyed and the moments shift.
And it is interesting the parallels between a religious experience and watching the show, because when you enter into any sort of faith bargain or religious endeavor, you are not entirely sure what to expect. You're making a leap of faith, and Shadow is making a leap of faith and entering into an unexplained world. So we're trying to strike that balance of a protagonist who knows nothing about this world and an audience who knows the world is called American Gods and can wiki whatever details they want. So we get there by the last episode of the season and kind of like break it down. But in order for the audience to continue on Shadow's journey, they have to figure some shit out themselves.
You didn't do yourself favors in terms of production because you didn't have sets. Like, you were moving all over the place, I gather.
Yeah, that was probably one of the biggest challenges of the show was we didn't have those staples of a traditional television production to fall back on, which are standing sets. Everything was new for the first time, and that was a particular challenge because we were never able to get a rhythm going with the show because there wasn't anything ever to return to.
So you're like, did you go, uh-oh, and then have to call Chris Albrecht at Stars and say, you know, remember the number we were talking about? Because it's not going to be that.
We did talk to our studio was very surprised at how things didn't conform to expectation and that the number kept rising. And it wasn't something we expected either because we both have experience of producing to a budget. But this was a choice of if we produced to a budget, we couldn't deliver the show that the novel deserved.
So they were pregnant and they just had to carry it to term.
That was our gamble.
We did screw ourselves in the scope of the show in a way that was pretty clear during production, but violently clear during post when post was as active and demanding of our time.
Yeah.
As the rest of production, the visual effects, the sound design, the color timing of the images, that it
yeah,
required.
Every day was a 12-hour day.
Let me just ask you about the penises. What I'm trying to get to is, even on Netflix, I don't know that you would be able to show the kind of stuff you're showing in terms of, you know, always been a ridiculous double standard.
And
you know,
Starz was aware of the double standard and wanted to subvert it.
They did.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I get a meeting, they said, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. They said, we are comfortable with nudity and we prefer that it is equal opportunity nudity. You don't have to have nudity, but if you do, make sure that it's both male and female, because we are aware of perceptions of certain networks and certain shows that are primarily female nudity and no male nudity. And we
consider it done.
Yeah. And we were like,
good on them.
Yeah.
Were you surprised? Mm-hmm. Were you like, okay, then we're going to put in a lot more?
No, it was for us, what we said is, here's the relationship we want to have to sexuality in the show. It needs to be character or story focused. If it isn't, it won't be there. But one of the most interesting things they said, and Brian mentioned, that they said, we also don't require it.
Your call.
Yeah, your call. If an episode has or doesn't have nudity.
Had you thought about it?
Well, we knew that there were two scenes in particular that were going to have nudity in them, the Bilquis scene and also the Salim Jin story, which comes in episode 3. And there were conversations with actors about what their penises would look like.
I really need to know just a little more about what that conversation sounds
so
like.
So there's a scene with Amit Abdahi, who plays Salim, and Musa Qureshi, who plays the djinn. And there is a scene where the djinn steps out of the bathroom having just showered and he drops his towel. And we had done a couple of takes and I got a call from the director who said Musa doesn't want to drop his towel. And I said, oh, that's surprising because we want to have the male nudity. But where Musa was coming from is that he wanted to connect with Michael and I and be reassured that this was going to be tasteful and beautiful and non-exploitive. And these are two straight men who are doing this scene. And we talked a lot about sex positivity. And so the djinn and the wish fulfillment was going to make love to this man in a way that we wanted to convey the spiritual experience of a primal sexual connection. And to do that required a certain explicitness in what you saw. We wanted Salim to be loved in this sequence and to know physical love. It was a little bit like Porky's in that we were trying to get Pee-wee laid, but we wanted
but
to get
beautiful.
Him laid properly
right.
and beautifully.
We were determined to make, especially in the Salim's djinn sequence, it was not going to be a gay or straight thing. It was just going to be a beautiful sequence that was going to represent things that just you don't get to see, two Muslim men making love. It was something that, you know, from my experience, I wouldn't have thought of, but I remember the first times we were talking about this where you said, we will have done something if young Muslim men around the world see this and feel like the feelings they have are now okay because it's been represented for the first time. And that made me want to make this sequence the best we could. And we put a lot of time, resources into getting it right.
It was $250,000 for the sex scene.
That is support.
And that doesn't even count shooting it twice.
Which we did shoot it twice because the sequence was filmed. Guillermo Navarro was our director, a heterosexual man. Amid and Musa are both heterosexual men. So when we saw the dailies...
it didn't ring true for you.
Yeah.
Emotionally, anatomically.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So you redid it so that it would be...
We did it twice.
And these two guys were like, I didn't want to drop the towel the first time.
Well, here's the interesting thing about it just from a filmmaking perspective. Yes, everyone giggled through the whole thing, but it was a very professional team, director, actors, everyone on set, because everyone understood that if this was done correctly, it would be something to see. It would be something to experience and it would be meaningful. That doesn't mean you can't giggle the whole time. That's just part of fun.
Gotta do it.
We've got more anecdotes.
I'm sure you do.
It's a funny thing when an application of your artistic tastes comes to something as hilarious as that and making that right, because it is about taste and getting something to look right. That's my throat telling me to just shut up and move on.
Michael Green and Brian Fuller are the showrunners of American Gods on Starz. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.